session number 10782, Reel 2.
Mr. Beck, Reel 2. Now, I think a little later in the summer of 1940, you helped with the Dunkirk evacuation.
That's
Can
true.
You tell me in detail what you remember about that?
Well, we'd gone to Plymouth to load with mines to do a mine lay from Plymouth, and these orders were countermanded, and we dashed off to Dunkirk, tearing up the channel as fast as we could make it. And we were told we're going to Dunkirk to evacuate the army. Well, we arrived there, and it was chaos, because there was no means of getting large numbers of men out to the ship. Icarus dropped two whalers and a motorboat. A motorboat was only intended to carry six people. It took these two. We couldn't get in. We took 13-foot draft forward, you see. Consequently, we couldn't get close enough to the beach. Couldn't anchor. Didn't anchor because of the aerial activity. There's continuous bombing and dive bombing periodically. The Stukas would come over and have a go. So we had to keep literally moving. Just going around in little circles and back and forward to keep off the beach mainly and to try and avoid the bombing. And they launched this motorboat and the two whalers. The motorboat towed them in with a couple of men in each. It took about 4 hours to get them full and bring the men back. Well, they're 8 hours. I don't think we took a couple of hundred soldiers aboard. And why we left, I don't know. But we went back to Dover, unloaded these chaps, went straight back. And when we got back the second time, there was four RNLI lifeboats there. And they saved the day because they could bring a, overload them to the limit. And we got 1,100 soldiers aboard, 1,100 on a little ship like that. You couldn't move, and of course bombing is going on, ships are being sunk round us. As we were going in the second time, a Thames paddle steamer was going out, absolutely crammed, and a bomb must have gone down the funnel, because she just erupted in 1,000 pieces. Everybody aboard was drowned. There was no argument about it. We went in, and we've got 1,100 soldiers on in, I would say, 2 hours, something like that. And the thing that everybody helped, if you're off watch, you drag them in, pull them in anyhow. And the biggest thing that struck me was we couldn't get the rifles from the soldiers. Wouldn't give them up. You had to get rough with them, can't give this up. But in the end, it was a matter of just taking them from them. Emptying the magazines on the deck, chucking the rifles in the pile and packing them in, right in the mess decks up forward where the seamen lived, down on the stoker's decks, everywhere. We had about a couple of dozen down the engine room, chaps who were obviously in severe shock, shivering like hell. They needed some heat. It was warm enough there, but they were, So we had about 12 down the engine room just because it was warmer. And they all fell asleep. They all thought they were home. It was, it was absolutely not pathetic, but I don't know. I can't explain the feeling, but I thought these poor devils think they're safe now because of the board of the ship. They had to go through the bombing to get out, and you had bombing for a good half to three quarters of an hour, and then they gave up following and went back because there was always plenty of targets for them. We did that for 4 days, and we're absolutely out in the feet. Nobody could do anything, and then sent us round to lie off Southend Pier for 12 hours. We just dropped anchor off Southend Pier in the Thames. Everybody get their head down except some lookouts, and everybody just crashed down where they were and had 6 hours sleep. Then we wakened up, off we went again. Filthy, no baths, no washes. Very little food, but and we carried on for the next 3 days like that. and it got untenable. We couldn't get in, you see. Off Dunkirk, there's a course runs in a southwesterly direction, and off Dunkirk there's a shallows of some sort. I don't know what it is. And you've got either come in from north or the south. Well, we're using a north entry to start with, but so many ships sunk, couldn't get in or out. So we had to go in from the south, and one of the last trips we went in, our gunners were actually knocking out German tanks on the beach. They got down to, you know, to surround the town. And as we came in running parallel with the beach, they knocked several German tanks out with their 4.7 guns. Couldn't miss them. Went up to where the RNLI boats were operating, loaded up, and came back out again. And another pot shot at the German army. And it was decided that we couldn't get in again. The Germans were too close to the town, you see. So we went over after dark one night. Only destroyers. And each pair of destroyers were going in pairs right into the harbour alongside the mole. And our time was 5 minutes past midnight to 12:30. And as we came up to the entry, two destroyers came out in reverse. The two of us went in. There was no thought for safety or damage against the wall. I always remember their skipper sat with his leg over the bridge yelling, "Come on then, hurry up, get aboard." Oh, beg your pardon. You know, he's a real wild man in a way. And we got a compliment all right. Bang on 25 past, they just cut the couple of ropes that were, and off we went. Went out to stern. As we went out through the wall, through the out to the sea, two more came in past us. And we went out to stern quite a way and turned around. And we just set off and we rammed the tug loaded with soldiers, sunk it. Must have been a hell of a loss of life.
How was the tug sunk?
We ran into it, cut it in two. And there was such a crash, you know. The tug was just cut in two, and all the poor soldiers aboard must have been drowned. They couldn't stop. Our gyro compass was damaged. I always remember at 2 o'clock in the morning, the chief ERA came along to me and he said, and whispered to me, "We're in the middle of a British minefield." He said, "That's why we're going at 5 knots. He said, "For goodness sake, don't let the rumour get round that KC soldiers go, you know, panic." And for the next hour, it was just waiting on it. Unfortunately, we didn't hit one. We came out, and we knew right away as soon as the speed started, we speeded up. And it took us all night to get back to Dover that night. And that was the last trip we did.
How many trips did you think you did to Dunkirk?
At least 7.
Sometimes to the mole, and sometimes to the beach.
But mostly to the beaches. That night after dark was the only one we went alongside anything. We always went to the beach, and the National Lifeboat Institute lifeboats brought the men to us. But I should imagine by the time we went back that night, these RNLI boats had withdrawn as well. Because the Germans were right in the town. And I've never seen such a spectacular blaze. All the tank farms were alight. Petrol and oil fuel. 100-foot flames. And that was why I think we hit this tug. Because of the brilliant light behind us, everything in front was pitch black. And we had no radar in those days, of course, to pick out anything in the way. So we came back to Dover, unloaded all our troops, and I must say, one thing I did learn on that job was to put boiler gauge glasses in. You know, on a boiler, there's two tube glasses that show the water level. Never fitted so many in all my life. Concussion from near misses, you know. Number two boiler room, gauge glass gone. And it was quite a frightening experience, sitting there on the top grill in the boiler, fitting a new gauge glass, you know, and all this racket going on outside, and again, high pressure steam within five or six inches of your face. Everything red hot. You all had to wear gloves to do the job.
But the Icarus wasn't actually hit.
We had aft the funnel had about six perforations in it. One steering with two steering motors. One steering motor was put out of action. One generator in the engine room was out of action. There were several dents in the hull where large lumps of metal had hit her, but not penetrated. With only two of the crew wounded, one of the seamen, the POs, got his thigh broken. He was blowing, you see, blowing against and at the after deck house, and the way he landed, he broke his thigh. And a young seaman picked up a bit of shrapnel in his shoulder. But apart from that, it was a very lucky ship.
And very useful one at Dunkirk.
No, aye. Oh, we can't have corn, I think. We were sent to Portsmouth as soon as we unloaded. Portsmouth Dockyard for repair. We got along to Portsmouth in no time. Went in inside the basin and dockies came aboard. And we were there for 1 week. Everything worked round the clock, making good the defects. And our next job was night patrol between Goodwin Sands and Dungeness, waiting for the invasion. Now that was a hairy job. We had E-boats every night, probing the defences. I think we must have loosed off more 4-7 shells on that job than any other job. You know, and all you could see was, I've seen them, just a silver streak in the distance.
Did you think that would be an invasion?
Oh, we fully expected it, yes. Oh, we thought there was going to be an invasion. Oh, yes, we were all geared up for it. And we did that for 6 weeks. And was suddenly sent back to Imium, which was our home base in Humber here for mining activities. Came back to Imium. And we arrived in Imingham on a Wednesday night. I can't fix the date too well, but the chum and I went up to Grimsby.
Uh-huh.
A chum of mine, another ERA and I, went up to Grimsby on the Saturday night. And we got liberal leave on this job, you know, the mine laying. We used to get all night leave from Imingham. We went up to Grimsby. And we sat in the, we had a favourite pub, a navigation hotel on Cleethorpes Road that we used to, Victoria Road, I beg your pardon, Victoria Road, Grimsby. And we used to meet there, you know, we went ashore separately, we used to always finish up there. And the naval patrol came in about 8 o'clock. What ships? Was it Icarus? Recall immediately. Oh, hell. So we went straight back to Imingham. And the ship was already, the five ships of the flotilla were already in the lockpit. We all piled aboard off. And we did a 30-knot run down to Dover. And the rumour was that the invasion started. It went hell for leather that night. There was a black night, and there was these five destroyers. And we were straight down to Dover. Got there at dawn next morning. Absolutely nothing. And we went up as far as Dungeness and back, and straight back to Imingham. We never found out what that panic was. Even our skipper never told us.
Now, I think that you took part later on in that year in the evacuation from Spitsbergen.
That is true, yes.
What happened then?
We took the Empress of Canada, the liner Empress of Canada, one cruiser, which I think was Nigeria. It was that class. I'm sure it was Nigeria. And four destroyers. And we picked the Empress of Canada up in the Clyde. Went straight to Spitsbergen. To Longyear City. Which was a mining community. Russian miners. We had 20 Canadian army sappers aboard each destroyer. as passengers with all their demolition equipment. We dropped anchor off this Goodyear city and ferried the sappers ashore, and very shortly after that, all the mines, the winding gear was all built in timber. Massive timber erections for hauling the coal, and there was huge mounds of coal. There must have thousands and thousands of tons of coal. And very soon we saw these things toppling, explosion, and down they would come, or demolishing everything. And we loaded, we went alongside a wooden jetty, and all the Russians were lined up there. And we ferried them back and forward and put them onto the Empress of Canada. Did about 5 or 6 trips. And they all had, all they were allowed to take was a bundle of personal belongings. Put them on the Empress of Canada, up anchor, and we took the Russians to Archangel. And uneventful trip, we were straight there. And Russian tenders took these Russians off, and we went straight back to Spitsbergen again. There was no stopping, you know. And we anchored in the same place. And we were, Icarus was detailed to go and fetch some Norwegians from our very outlandish little trappers. It took us about 3 hours, and we saw some spectacular scenery. We passed up a narrow field, and one side was a 200 foot high ice
glacier,
yeah, massive thing, must have been about nearly a mile long. We went past this, and at the head of this field there was four figures there, four people, and it was two Norwegian trappers, the wives, and the dog teams. So we got them aboard. The dogs were wild, you know. And there was a tea chest with 6 pups in, only 2 or 3 days old. Got them aboard, and they tied the dog teams at the stern, you know, to the guardrail, one at each side. Set off back. And as I say, the scenery was spectacular. It was midnight sun, of course, daylight all the time. And as we're on our way, one of the dogs got loose, attacked another one, and tore all its jaw from its eye right down, wide open. The Norwegians stopped them, of course. And our young RNVR doctor was coaxed into stitching this lot up. I actually saw it done. The Norwegian trapper got hold of the dog, you know, whacking it out, and the doctor was, he was terrified. He stitched its lot up. The dog never flinched, and he was talking to it in Norwegian all the time, keeping it quiet.
These were husky dogs, weren't they?
Oh, whacking great huskies. First time I'd ever seen dogs so big and rough. You didn't touch them, you know. Some of the lads tried to stroke them, and all they got was a big growl. Dear. That was it. Anyway, we got back alongside the Empress of Canada, and started, you know, putting them aboard. And the trapper who owned the 6 pups picked one out and handed it to one of the Icarus ship's company. There you are, Doug, a mascot for you. And it was called Bupta. That was its name. We called it Bupta. Why it got that, I don't know. It was as soft as... It got as soft. You know, it was ruined amongst many sailors, and it was growing into a fucking great thing. And how our skipper got away with it, I don't know, but he used to take it ashore at Scapa Flow for walks, you know, highly illegal. And one day, Lioness, that was the destroyer base at Scapa, he was taking the dog ashore, and he called the motorboat away, and he got in. The dog jumped in the after portion, and one of the boat's crew had been working on the stern gland, and he hadn't put the boards back. And the poor animal's tail got wrapped around the propeller shaft and ripped it off. And all there was a little stub. The animal was in agony. And they chucked it back aboard, and it ran forward, and it finished up in the chief and PO's wash place. Tiled floor, damp coal. It just laid down there, absolutely. And it laid overnight, and the following day the first lieutenant had to shoot it. It was obviously in agony. So that was the end of the ship's musket. And I think that was the end of the Spitsbergen episode, because we took any Norwegian that were there back to the Clyde. We took about 40 or 50 Norwegians off, you see. In the main, there were Russian miners, several hundred of them. And I went back to the Clyde, and the Norwegians were put ashore in Scotland. And I remember distinctly we went back to Scapa Flow then.
I think that the next interesting thing that you did was manning off the Dutch coast.
Yes, well, we had two types of jobs we did for Memmingham. We called one a club run and one a home run. The club run was across the enemy territory, you see. And the minelaying flotilla comprised of five ships. I think I've listed them there for you. Express, Esk, Intrepid, Icarus, Impulsive. The routine was that we'd get our steaming orders the previous night. About 10 o'clock, the steaming boat would appear on our mess table, steam for 25 knots at 0700, something like that, you see. And we would load up with a special loading ramp, and each ship in turn reversed up to this loading ramp, and they brought the mines up by railway truck, four to a truck, and the dockers would attach the slings, and the crane would lift them down. And that was it. As far as they were concerned, they weren't interested anymore. The men who used to man the torpedo tubes were the mine laying staff on the ship. And they would unhitch them, push them right up the rails. And the rails were so designed that they held the wheels. The ship rolled, couldn't get away, you see. Loaded up. And we normally set off at noon if it was a club run, because we had to get there by midnight the following night, under cover of dark. And the idea was to get there without being seen. Lay your mines and get out without being seen. Otherwise they'd just come out and sweep them up. And on each ship, there was a large, right on the stern, there was a drum, a 6 foot diameter drum of piano wire, steel wire. And the system was, the idea was to travel either down the south or up north, wherever we were going, and get opposite the point of the actual lay. All ships would turn around at right angles to the coast, facing in the path we were going to take. And each ship had put a big weight on the end of the wire and dropped over, because when you come down to the shallow water, they soon touch bottom. And when everybody reported that they were ready, it set off very slowly, and this big drum started paying out. And there was a recorder on that recorded the feet, yards, whatever, that we covered. And this went on, and we went in a straight line. Darkness fell, and we'd do about 12, 15 knots, something like that, steadily till about 10 o'clock at night. And then we always reduced right down to 5 knots and crept in. Because at that speed, all the machinery in the ship was eased down, particularly the boiler room fans, which were the noisiest, the intake of air. You can hear it miles away at night. And we'd go in, and when they got to the required place, the wires were just cut, put an axe through the wires, and they started laying the mines. And the leader would lay his mines, move out the way, and the next ship would come up and lay his. And every ship had to come up on the starboard side. Anything that came up on the port side was sunk. And that, they didn't like that, because that aborted the operation. It advertised the fact that you were in the area, you see. We did, on two occasions, have to sink patrol boats that had come challenging, find out what was going on. And that just aborted the mission then and cleared out. But each destroyer, five destroyers, we carried 120 mines apiece, so we could lay a fairly big minefield. And that was the job, and then we'd turn around and steal out quietly, about 5 knots for an hour or so, and then hell for leather across the channel of the North Sea, back to base. Used to do about some weeks 2 lays a week, or maybe only one. It depended, I suppose, on what was wanted. As I say, we got, we used to get all night leave from him. It was a good job from that angle.
How did you lose the esk then? How did you lose the esk?
Well, that particular night we went through the motions, and I was on after fire repair party that night. I was stood talking to the mining crew, and we were still plodding along, and suddenly we altered course at 10 o'clock at night. We turned to the northeast. We'd been heading southeast, you see, towards Holland. We turned northeast, and just before midnight, the esk was torpedoed by an E-boat. And our wireless, people insisted later that they were still getting messages from her after she'd been sunk. So we were putting two and two together. We think it was the signal that they'd received to alter call to the lay position was German origin. It was a decoy, yeah. And there was E-boats waiting for us. They missed the first ship, the Express, they missed her, but the second one in line, Esk. And we were third in line, and our captain was, well, he wanted to go in for survivors, but the senior man out, so we turned around. And we'd only been belting back towards the English coast of half an hour or so when action station bells clanged out. Ships approaching from ahead, thought to be five destroyers. Fortunately, they were our own destroyers, had been alerted, and were coming over to see what they could help. And we just passed through each other, you know, a hell of a lick. We brought our mines back to Emmingham and unloaded them. And we never went on another trip after that. Maybe because the two fast mine layers had been commissioned, Manxman and Latona, you know, the big 50 knotters that they built.
It was then that you became a destroyer.
Went back to Portsmouth, and we had all our armament put back. One set of tubes was put back, but in the place of the after set of tubes, they put us a 3-inch anti-aircraft gun, which was more of a laugh than anything, because it had 1914 stamped on the breech.
Now, once you became a normal destroyer again,
yes.
I think that you went on convoy duties.
Well, 41, 42 and 43, we were convoying Atlantic, Russian convoys. We went through to Malta in August 42 with a convoy that fought its way through there.